Welcome back to Fan Drive Time. I'm Blake Murphy. No Ben Ennis today, so it's just me and all our pals. If you were impressed with Patrick Mahomes doing what he did in the AFC Conference Championship game with a badly sprained ankle, boy, are you going to be impressed by our next guest coming to us, even though he's under the weather, of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, of Westwood One, of My Front Page Gift. It's Ross Tucker. Ross, I hope you are joining us feeling a little better than last I heard.
Yeah, I mean, I feel okay. It's just my voice. My daughters are both sick, and I've been doing so many radio appearances that I just haven't given it a chance to, like, heal up. So hopefully over the weekend it'll be all right, and I'll be ready to go for Super Bowl week next week.
Ah, come on. A gamer like you isn't going to be at any risk of missing Super Bowl week. I imagine, well, first of all, because you're very good at your job and you're very committed to it, but I'd imagine, Ross, you're a guy who every stop you make over the course of the NFL season, you're posting about the different media spreads. I like to ask you about the media food spread, whatever city you're in that time. What are we looking at for the Super Bowl? Like, does the Super Bowl host tend to go absolutely all out all week long?
You know, that has varied over the years. And actually, most times, I don't stay for the game. You know, I'm just there during the week. But there's a media party. They have food sometimes brought in to Radio Row. Like, if you're smart, okay, and you are any type of restaurant or eatery in Phoenix, you should absolutely cater Radio Row. I mean, there's like hundreds of radio stations, and we're all suckers for free food. You bring over free food over there, then we go right on the radio, right then or later in the day or the next day, and we rave about it. We rave about how awesome Phoenix is. We rave about how great the food is. Oh, my gosh, I had these tacos from Blake's Taco Joint. It was amazing. Anybody out here, you got to go. When you fly out here from Philly, you got to go. Like, it's such a no-brainer. Like, if they really realized, you know, what advertising rates are and what they cost, if they really realized the value that they're creating just by catering one meal at Radio Row, if they all knew it was available, they would all do it.
There's nothing that sports media love more than free food. You're right. So I think there's an opportunity there. We'll see if the establishments in Phoenix come correct. So you'll be down there. You'll be helping us tee up Chiefs against Eagles in the Super Bowl. In going through some of the numbers and some of what we've seen through the course of the playoffs, one thing that stood out to me is that if we're laying out which team has the edge in which area, it seems like the Eagles have a lot of edges other than at the quarterback position. Now, Jalen Hurts has had a very, very strong season. He's in the MVP conversation, but Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes. How much, like, would you agree that the key on the Kansas City side is to be overly simplistic, get there healthy, and Patrick Mahomes outplays Jalen Hurts?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you that the edge for the Chiefs is a quarterback. I think Patrick Mahomes is the best player on the planet. And I don't know that it's really close. Like, Burrow's really good, and Josh Allen's really good, and Hurts had a great year. But, man, if you were starting a franchise, if you asked every GM, all right, you're starting the 33rd franchise, the Toronto Tuckers, okay? And you can have any quarterback for the next 10 years. I just can't imagine anybody not picking Mahomes. That would really surprise me, which tells you all you need to know, which is why I think the Chiefs have a good chance in this game, even though the Eagles are the better team. I mean, the Eagles have the best O-line in the NFL. They probably have the best D-line in the NFL. They have the best wide receivers in franchise history. They probably have the best corners in franchise history. They have an MVP candidate quarterback. 18 of their 22 starters are Pro Bowl or Pro Bowl alternates. I mean, you know, I grew up outside of Philadelphia. I never played for them or anything. But it's the best team the Eagles have ever had. I mean, it's the best Eagles team I've ever seen. Now, they might lose, and, you know, then they don't get to have that claim because they don't win the Super Bowl. But they are really, really good. The advantage for the Chiefs, if there is one, is that if it gets to be a close game, which is very possible, I mean, that's what the point spread is now, we've all seen Patrick Mahomes make the clutch play to win the big game, you know, or a big playoff game or a close game or whatever, a lot. Like, we've all seen that a lot. Hurts really hasn't done that. He really hasn't been asked to do that. He really hasn't had to do that. So I think that is the edge for the Chiefs. Close game, late, having the faith or the confidence that Mahomes makes the play late and perhaps, you know, Hurts does not. That doesn't mean Hurts can't. He just hasn't really been put in that situation, you know, very much.
You mentioned the line play of the Eagles on both sides, and this is an Eagles offensive line that, hey, we thought the 49ers had one of the best defensive lines in the league, and they ate them up. Obviously, the Chiefs have Chris Jones to kind of lead that attack there. Hassan Reddick for the Eagles on the other side. When you look at the pass rush game, you know, we can obviously, Reddick and Jones aren't head to head. They're on opposite sides of the game. But they're both, you know, trying to lead very solid pass rushes. How do you see those particular matchups playing out? I know we just talked lines from a quarterback focus, but can Chris Jones help get enough pressure on Jalen Hurts? Does Hurts stand to be possibly too comfortable behind that elite Eagles O-line?
Well, I don't think the Chiefs have a prayer unless they get the Eagles into obvious passing downs. You know, if the Eagles are able to run their RPO stuff, and they're able to run the football, and they never get in the third long, the Chiefs are cooked. And I think there's a real chance, if they elect to do so, that the Eagles can essentially run the ball down the Chiefs' throat. The Chiefs just don't have the depth, you know. And honestly, who does, you know, have the depth that the Eagles have? They just, you know, think about this for a second. And hopefully a bunch of your listeners are really into watching football. Robert Quinn had 18 and a half sacks for the Bears last year. He is third string for the Philadelphia Eagles. And Ndamukong Suh is the highest paid defensive player in the history of football. He is also third string for the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, that's nuts. That is nuts.
It's pretty wild. It's hard to think of like any kind of comparison, football or otherwise, to have that level of depth at a position of extreme strength already. It's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out, and it's going to be really interesting to see how Andy Reid on the other side tries to manage around those strengths for the Eagles. I'm curious, obviously the story about this one is going to be, well, Andy Reid just won a Super Bowl with the Eagles not long ago, and the Eagles have done such a great job turning things around with a new quarterback and a new head coach. I'm curious, though, on the other side of this, what does a win do for Andy Reid's legacy in your estimation? Like where does that vault him if the Chiefs come away with this one?
Well, I already think he is one of the five best coaches of all time. I think if he wins another Super Bowl, there aren't that many guys that have won multiple Super Bowls. So I think that sort of just cements, I guess, how I already feel or what I already think about Andy Reid in that regard. I think that just kind of would reinforce how good I think he really is. And I think other people would probably start to feel that way as well. If he loses, the knock on him will be he just didn't get it done enough in big games. You know, he's lost a lot of conference championship games. He's lost a couple Super Bowls. So, you know, if his record's 1-3 in Super Bowls, and then he'd be like, what, 3-8, I guess, in conference championship games, that would, I guess, be the knock against Andy.
Yeah, it's a tough one, and Eagles fans know well. You know, he was at the helm there in the era where they were a Super Bowl threat every year, but didn't manage to make one over, I think, 9 seasons where Reed helped lead them to the playoffs. And now, yeah, the Chiefs, the closest thing to a dynasty that we can really have, even though they've only won the 1 Super Bowl. It's just being there all the time and 5 straight conference championships. It's tough to do that, but I'm with you. I think another Super Bowl here more or less locks him in. When you let's pivot off the Super Bowl quickly, because you said something on air the other day, and I saw it on your Twitter feed, so forgive me for not remembering where I saw it. But speaking of all-timers and Hall of Famers and best stubs, you were more surprised than I maybe anticipated by the news yesterday that Tom Brady is hanging them up and sounding like he legitimately is going to hang them up and not turn around and change his mind a month from now. Why were you surprised by that news?
I guess just because there had been a lot of buzz from people suggesting that he was going to play again. You know, it just seemed like he wanted to keep playing, and people were talking about, you know, the teams he might go to, et cetera. It just seemed like that was what the conversation was about. Most people, it seemed like, were expecting him to play. And so I really wasn't expecting him to make a decision this early. And I definitely wasn't expecting him to decide to retire this early, because I guess I would think that after what happened last year, he would have wanted to give it a little bit more time, you know, before he makes that decision, right? Before he decides what he wants to do. Because I know he doesn't want to, you know, unretire again, right? I know he doesn't want to have that happen again. So I guess I kind of thought he would take some more time before he made the decision, but I guess not.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's I'm sure a lot went into it. I'm sure how this season went out, played out rather, had an impact there as well. Ross, I'm going to let you go because I know you're under the weather and you're playing hurt for us. But before I do, if someone else were having some trouble, you know, with their voice or just finding their words, and they wanted to give someone a gift for Valentine's Day, for a birthday, anything like that, and need a little help with someone else putting things into words for them, what might you recommend for them?
Ooh, I like that. That was a nice transition right there. honestly, man, like with Valentine's Day coming up, it's an absolute no-brainer. It's myfrontpagestory.com. To be able to have a professional writer write a story all about a loved one, the cool thing about it is, like, when you give it to them, they don't know that this is a company. So they think, like, you went out of your way to research, like, to hire some writer to write this story about your wife or whatever. It's amazing. You know, most of the women that receive it don't even know that this is a thing that you can do. So they're like blown away. They've never heard of it. They think it's the most romantic thing they've ever gotten. To see the pictures of them and you framed, maybe with the kids, maybe not, looks like it's on the cover of the newspaper. It's just really an emotional gift. And then when they actually read the story and read the quotes out loud from you, I'm just telling you, man, they get choked up and cry pretty much every time. I mean, I've seen a lot of videos at this point. It's really, really cool, man. Like, they're not expecting it. It's the gift that keeps on giving, because since it's framed, it'll be hanging up in the house somewhere. It's awesome. Highly recommend it. Myfrontpagestory.com. Myfrontpagestory.com.
All right, Ross. Well, hopefully people will check that out. Hopefully you're feeling a little better when we talk to you again next week from down in Phoenix at the Super Bowl. Get well soon. Hope you and the kids are feeling better ASAP.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Have a great weekend.
Ross Tucker, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Westwood One, myfrontpagestory.com. You can find him just about everywhere, at Ross Tucker NFL as well. I had some fun today diving into some of the line stuff. Full disclosure, you know, I watch football the way I think most people around here watch football. And it's, yeah, I got a fantasy focus. I got a gambling focus. I got a team. But you know, knowing the level of offensive line scheme and things like that. And then you read all the people who put out the good content ahead of the Super Bowl, and everyone's focused on the line play for this matchup. So it's been pretty cool to dig into that a little bit, learn a little bit more tactically about what makes the Eagles so effective on both sides of the line. Still kind of got a, I mean, I not ready to feel any kind of way about it, but it's still Patrick Mahomes, right? And we saw him play on one foot last week and be able to succeed against a pretty good team. And even before that, he got through the Jacksonville Jaguars, the uncrowned 2024 Super Bowl champion Jacksonville Jaguars. So hard to ever think anything other than Mahomes will find a way, but you heard Ross say it. This is maybe the best Eagles team all around that he's ever seen. And that's a guy who would know being from that area. And this is an Eagles franchise that's had a lot of very good teams over the last two decades or so. So that's saying a lot. We'll have a lot of Super Bowl tee up stuff next week, of course, as we go through our usual cast of football guests, but get a little more narrow on the game. Monday is, I believe, Super Bowl kickoff day. So we'll have plenty around that. That's always a fun day. We're going to hear from the Kelce brothers a boatload. I'm sure they're giving each other offensive plays and a bunch of other nonsense on their podcast. The first time brothers are going head to head in the Super Bowl. So that'll be a lot of fun to tee up next week. No football this week is always a bit of a weird thing. It's the bizarro weekend where it's supposed to be Pro Bowl weekend, but there's not really a Pro Bowl anymore. And it's NHL All-Star weekend. But the most interesting thing about All-Star weekend is A, all the last minute injury replacements, and B, the weird Fort Lauderdale specific stuff. Luckily there's lots of basketball, and there's probably going to be lots of basketball rumors. For anyone who doesn't know, or doesn't recall, doesn't make mental notes of these things the way I do, this weekend figures to actually be a little quieter in terms of the NBA rumors, even though the deadline is creeping closer. If you look at the history of, or recent history at least, of NBA moves in the 2 weeks leading up to the trade deadline, days like yesterday, today, tomorrow, you might see a small move or two. The weekend is usually pretty quiet. And then come Monday morning, every newsbreaker you follow, every newsbreaker you read is going to have some sort of notes column coming out of the weekend with all the hottest goss. And then we're into silly season for a couple of days leading up to what has been the last few years, a very chaotic trade deadline day. As a reminder, on trade deadline day, the Raptors show with William Liu will be an extended edition here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on Sportsnet 360, and YouTube, of course. And then Ben Annis and I will be doing an extended version of Fan Drive Time, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m., going through all of the fallout from the deadline. I'd imagine we'll have at least one Raptors move to break down, possibly several. I don't think this is going to be the Bruno Caboclo for Malachi Richardson or Austin Day for Nando DiColo type of year. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe. When we come back, Eric Green of The Athletic will feel differently. We'll reunite Raptors Reasonableist with Eric Green next as Fan Drive Time continues. Welcome back to Fan Drive Time. I'm Blake Murphy. Ben Annis out sick. So when I was out sick, he called on his former co-host, JD Bunkus. Turnabout is fair play. I'm now joined by my former co-host of Raptors Reasonableist podcast, when that still existed, of The Athletic. It's Eric Green. Eric, how are you, buddy?
Blake, I'm super psyched with that lead-in song. How are you?
I'm good, man. That is, of course, the old babyface entrance music of Sami Zayn. I think on a Thursday, that's far enough removed from Saturday's Royal Rumble that we don't have to worry about spoiling anything. Eric, the big question for me as a low-key ska fan, are we getting that entrance music back for Sami Zayn now that he's on the right side of justice?
I don't know if you can make that change so quickly. I think, don't you think this is heading to, before we get to anger and righteousness, don't you think it's heading toward like a little Sammy depression arc?
Well, that's right up our alley. Yeah, that's right up our alley here.
It's sad Sammy season, baby.
What did you make of that? Because I know heading into the Royal Rumble, and for those listening for basketball stuff, we'll only spend a minute on this, but Sportsnet is the home of WWE. You can watch SmackDown, where we'll probably get the first comments from Sami Zayn on Sportsnet channels tomorrow night. And you could go back and watch the Royal Rumble on Sportsnet now if you missed it and this hooks you in. But Eric, we had talked a lot heading in. I know you're a big Sami Zayn guy, his role in that story. And one way to pay that off or reach the next chapter in that story would have been for him to play a big role in the Royal Rumble. WWE avoided that. They didn't even put him in the Rumble. They let the Cody Rhodes of it all play out on its own. And for a moment, it seemed like a bit of an odd choice. And then when the closing angle played out with Roman Reigns, with Kevin Owens, you kind of understood why Sammy wasn't involved. Where are you today in terms of how you feel about, you know, what is going to happen with Sammy from here? That's a poorly worded question. You're used to those from me. But basically, it seems like it's going to be hard to get to Sammy Roman at Mania, but very, very easy to get to Sammy Roman in Montreal at Elimination Chamber in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if that's not the match. We'll see what happens for WrestleMania. You know, we've seen before, just 2 years ago, I believe, that it was going to be Edge versus Roman Reigns, and they decided to add Daniel Bryan to that in the last few weeks. And, you know, sometimes WWE is good and at thinking on their feet and making the changes that are necessary, and they'll probably see how the next few weeks go and which way the winds are blowing and adjust accordingly. But, like, the story is so well told that I'm trying not to think too far ahead, which is, you know, not my strength, admittedly, but I'm just trying to enjoy it for what it is, because, like, it's been a really long time since we saw a long-term story told this well, and really, like, I don't know if we've ever seen a long-term story acted this well in professional wrestling.
Seriously, and it's elevated everyone involved. People care more about Sammy, about Kevin Owens. This is the best Roman Reigns has ever been. The Usos, even Solo Sikoa, this being his introduction to WWE, it's pretty great. And you're right. Sometimes WWE lays these plans out months and months and months ahead of time, and they're forced to pivot off of it. Not unlike the 2022-23 Toronto Raptors, who...
I was wondering how you were going to get us there.
Yeah, who expected to, maybe not a WrestleMania moment this year, but they won 48 games last year. They expected to be a little bit better than this, at least, and probably a lot better than this. A lot of the conversation heading into the year was, how is this team going to fortify and make themselves better so that they can take a step forward from last year? And now we're dealing with the opposite. We're going to get into some of the specific and the nitty gritty of this next week. But Eric, at a high level, at this zoomed out reasonablest level, how did we get here? Why are we here? None of the pieces have changed, really. And things couldn't have gone in a more opposite direction than they went last year.
Well, I think when you ask that question, what it really is asking is what happened to the defense here? Because the offense performing as it has, and frankly, it's been like decent to good in January, not in certain ways, but, you know, it's been... they've been holding their own on offense. But the idea, and I know you wrote about it, I've written about it, it's hard to ignore when you're trying to analyze why this team is disappointing so much. The idea of this team was to be find a way to be average on offense and be an excellent defensive team. And they have just not been that. Like, some of their most memorable losses, I'll include last night, like just getting torched by teams that, you know, aren't necessarily the most explosive teams. You think about Minnesota without Towns. You think about Milwaukee without both Middleton and Giannis. The Hawks, who've had a miserable season, really handed them a game. And I think the defense hasn't lived up to it. And I don't think there's any one super obvious way to explain that other than the perimeter defense hasn't been, you know, the internal options haven't been as good as they thought they would be. I'm talking about that as a whole. We can go through the specifics. I don't think we need to. That's the biggest thing. And they still don't have the paint presence to, and you saw against Utah with Walker Kessler, to make up for some of those mistakes. So they're getting cut to the rim. They're getting bludgeoned at the rim. And I think they're starting to take that away and really overhelping. But that's when you get nights like Wednesday, when Utah is just like Lauri Markkanen has two or three corner threes on like successive possessions. And this is like one of the best shooters in the league. And the Raptors have long tried to, like, they know they're going to give up threes. You don't want to give up the best shots to the best shooters. And that's sort of where they are now. So we could break it down on a much more granular level, but it's been the defense that hasn't held up its end of the bargain. And, you know, if you want to talk about minutes load, if you want to talk about teams getting more used to their sort of trap-heavy, aggressive styles, I think all of that plays into it. But I think it all does start from that, you know, one-on-one perimeter defense just not being as good as they would have hoped.
Who would have thought the Raptors are 11th in offensive rating when we filter out garbage time and 20th in defensive rating? Since January 6th, Eric, they have had only two games where they've scored at a below average clip, and they've had only three games where they defended at an above average clip. That is not the recipe we expected. So obviously it puts the Raptors in an interesting trade deadline position here. I think we can probably agree that even if they turn things around the rest of the way, it wouldn't be in a meaningful playoff level way, I don't think. Who knows? Maybe it's a magical final third of the season, but I'm not a big believer in the likelihood of that. So I guess before we try to prescribe what comes this next week, when you look at where they are and how the defense has fallen off. And this is a complicated question as well. Do you think that we, and I mean you and I specifically, and the kind of collective we, thought they were closer than they were? And what I mean by that is, you know, we thought they were maybe a piece away last year, a big piece for sure, but yeah, a piece away. Whereas, you know, maybe what we're seeing now is that last year was the, you know, 90th percentile outcome. That was about as good as that group could get. Do we need to reevaluate how, or are we in the process of reevaluating how close this core group really is to being competitive?
Yeah, I think for sure. I think there's a whole bunch of ways to do that. Again, like a big part of why I thought this team was so close is because I thought, and this was a popular talking point in training camp, is like, after a full year of playing together, like the defense should be more aligned, not less aligned. They should be sharper, not, you know, more easily exploitable. And so that's a huge part of it. But I think you're also, like, when you consistently see that the best pieces on this team can't all get it going at the same time. Like, you had Pascal Siakam carry them for December while Fred VanVleet and Scottie Barnes had, you know, really disappointing months. And then those two got going, and Pascal Siakam, sort of understandably, given how many minutes he's played, like, it's watching him run in transition now compared to in December, it's a totally different thing. That comes down to not only how good is the high-end talent, but that's a legitimate question, but also the depth of this team just isn't championship caliber. And they really thought they are even, you know, good, to be honest.
Yes.
Or fit, or certainly does not fit well. We can say that for sure. I think some of these players in different roles or on different teams could thrive more than they're thriving in Toronto. And so what we can say for sure is that this is not a team that has been properly constructed in terms of fit. I have belief in a lot of the players, in a lot of the core players, that they can sort of have a similar role or a similar usage in different circumstances and succeed. Whether they can do it together, I'm a lot more skeptical about. And that's just about looking at, you know, not only the last 40 games or 45 games of last year, not only the looking at the 50 games of or so of this year, but also the playoffs last year when they got, you know, people forget it wasn't the offense that let them down in the playoffs. It was the defense that let them down. And I've sort of been thinking that maybe that was a little bit of a warning sign when a team can really scout them out. There are these limitations, but I don't want to keep on going back to the defense, but all roads when dissecting this team sort of do lead back there, I think.
Well, yeah, if you're supposed to be built around a top 10, maybe even top 5 defense and you're 20th, that's a reasonable talking point. So this time last year, Eric, and this decision looked especially bad last night, unfairly so, because Walker Kessler is going 17-14 and 7 blocks, a line that's been done now 3 times against the Raptors in the history of the team. So last year at the deadline, the Raptors were, they felt like they were close, and maybe not close to being competitive at the highest levels, but enough that their deadline move was to flip Goran Dragic and the memes of him being out of the lineup for this and that, and their first round pick to the San Antonio Spurs for Thad Young, Drew Eubanks, and a high second. Now, San Antonio used that pick on Malachi Branham, who hasn't, you know, set the world on fire, but has a 22-point game under his belt as recently as last night. And then one of the picks in between that and Christian Coloco is Walker Kessler. Now, I don't think any of us can say for certain if the Raptors stay in that pick, they take Walker Kessler. Christian Coloco is a guy who was a bubble first round option, checks a lot of the Raptors-y boxes. And what we've seen from him offensively, he doesn't look anywhere close. And that's been true even in his 3-9-0-5 games. But defensively, you can absolutely see what they were thinking with a guy like Christian Coloco. Now, having laid those caveats out, that trade looks maybe not misguided, but a bit of a misread. And then they kind of doubled down on it by going, you know, Otto Porter Jr. And that was injury related, how that's played out. But it's still a little, you know, I look at this roster and they have Thad and they have Otto Porter Jr. and they have Kem Birch and even Wancho, who's been, you know, as good as you could expect. It's a lot of roster spots on guys that you would usually use those roster spots on if you're already a contending team. Looking ahead to next Thursday, that is not going to be the case, right? Like this is, even if they're not in teardown mode, they are going to be sellers next Thursday. Would you agree with that in some, whether like we can debate the scale of that, but they're going to sell.
Yeah. There's some version of the world in which it's like refitters instead of sellers, but yeah, I would think like in any trade, not any trade, but in most trades that they'll be involved in, they'll be sending out the most marquee piece, the most marquee player in the trade, and the guy with the most value, and not getting like they will not be the guys really the team that's really going after someone of that scale. So, I mean, you can just see it, like OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam, if you know, and we sort of heard that OG Anunoby is available, Pascal Siakam is, you know, I'm sure they're taking calls, but it's going to be hard practically to trade him at this point just because he takes up such a big role. And the number of picks you'd want, there are only a few teams contending teams that can offer those right now. But in OG Anunoby, you probably have the most attractive player who might theoretically be on the trade market.
He's good at basketball, too.
He is very good at basketball, and he's an easy piece to fit in on the run. While the season is going on, you don't have to reimagine your offense or anything. At worst, he's a very good 3-and-D guy, and you'll figure out how to fit him and allow him to do more as you get more reps with him. But yeah, he certainly would lead the charge, and Fred VanVleet and Gary Trent are two guys who would be appealing to, you know, Fred VanVleet probably has less of a market in terms of how many teams would be interested in him, but the teams that would be interested in him would be very interested in him, is sort of my read. And Gary Trent is sort of the opposite, where like almost any team, it would make sense to trade for Gary Trent. It's just a matter of how high a team's willing to go.
The OG thing has been fascinating to see play out for me. And I know Chris Haynes and Mark Stein talked about it this morning, and we've heard as far back as, you know, Zach Lowe on the Low Post over a month ago saying what the return could be for OG. And it's not surprising that teams would really value him. But in, you know, if you lined up the decision points this franchise has to make, Fred and Gary are much, much sooner decisions. You've got another year at least of OG Anunoby. Are you a little surprised to see him kind of move to the forefront of Raptors rumors? And I guess I'm saying that as a way of gauging, you know, I think an OG trade says a lot more about the big picture decisions this franchise is making than Gary or Fred, who are tough decisions to be sure, but more ones they're on the clock for already.
Well, I did a back and forth with John Hollinger. This is probably about 10 days ago, and he used to be in the Memphis Grizzlies front office. And I asked him if he thought that a moment in time where you are at the top of the sellers list, if that makes it a more compelling time to trade. And I cited all the sort of reasons why this might be a great seller's market, you know, how many teams are theoretical championship contenders, how much the play-in is driving more teams who might tank otherwise or might, you know, not be buyers, let's say, to potentially be buyers. And, you know, just the relative scarcity of contributing pieces on some of the other teams that are obviously motivated to trade away some players. And he, you know, sort of said that the play-in is definitely a factor. He wasn't sure about the rest of it. But I think there is an advantage when you've got sort of the best, most realistic piece to move. When you're at the top of that mountain, it makes sense to jump. a little bit. I'm mixing metaphors terribly here, but
You're worrying me too, because you were just in Utah, and the only time I've been there, I did some hiking. I hope that's not the metaphor you were thinking of as you were in Utah.
No, I'm, you know, I just got off a plane 2 hours ago, so my brain is not at top function. But I think they're at a very advantageous point of it. I don't, you know, do I think it would be that much different if they waited till the summer? Like, would his value drop, knowing that for the CBA reasons we don't have time to get into, like, you're very unlikely to be able to extend him? I mean, maybe I'm a bit surprised, but also the fit doesn't work. Like, not him specifically, but like the big worry this year was how the offense would perform in the half court. And despite what we said about the offense, and it being 11th, it still doesn't work in the half court, more or less. And that's the, you know, I wouldn't put that squarely at the feet of OG Anunoby. It'd be nice if he was shooting a few percentage points better, for sure, from three. But there's just a lot of dribbling and analyzing and staring down the guy and reading the defense, and not a lot of ball movement. And him and Barnes and Siakam, and to an extent Fred VanVleet, are all part of that. So if they're not looking to break him up, but see an opportunity to move a guy for maybe more than he'll be worth in 4 months, that doesn't shock me. But, you know, it's not like the Raptors stopped liking OG Anunoby. They like him, but at some point, if you're going to, if the results are telling you what the results are telling us, you know, if not every game, every other game, you have to find ways to turn one of those pieces into something a little different and maybe a little more depth too.
Eric, one thing that always amuses me this time of year is you and I operate on a similar wavelength. And I think that was, you know, when we were teammates, that was a strength of the coverage and the podcast and everything. But you like to be on the suggesting fake trades side of things, whereas I'm in the process right now of working on my, hey, all your trade ideas are bad column that I do every year. Do you have a favorite fake trade that you've settled on? I believe you tweeted an OG one that involved the Knicks, but as you've kicked these things around, as you've talked to your athletic counterparts about potential frameworks, is there a favorite fake trade you've settled on?
Well, I don't know like the absolute specifics, but I would think like something with the Pelicans that would bring back Dyson Daniels would be really interesting to me. Like if you can do Devonte Graham, Dyson Daniels, and, you know, depending if they take back Pem Birch and you make it a bigger contract, you can start talking about which pick or which picks get sent over. But something with that framework would be really interesting to me. I'm a big fan of Daniels, and I think he fits with certain Raptors traits that they look for.
Yeah, he's 6'8" and can't shoot the three yet.
Yeah, he's also 19, so like that's a bit of a less of a concern.
Yes, of course.
Like the thing is, like the depth is a huge issue, but OG Anunoby, I don't want to say only, but like only is in the $17-18 million range, and you're probably not getting like three productive players right now for him. It's more likely to be a productive player and a decent pick, or a decent player and two picks, or, you know, pretty much just expirings and three picks. Like that's sort of my read of it. So it's which way do you want to go? But in terms of like the pieces that might be available, like Dyson Daniels would be the guy I have circled. How about you? Do you have any favorite targets in the potential Anunoby trade?
I do like the Pelicans as a framework. They have a lot of extra picks that I think they could be willing to move off of. The curious point for me with them is, has this little bit of a free fall they've been on given them pause that they're not there yet? They're not at that part of the curve yet? Or has it given them the encouragement to kind of go a little more aggressive? So that's one. I do like Daniels as a target there. You know, you can get into some of the, hey, could you get Najee Marshall back as a second piece and lessen the pick equity if you're really worried about rotation pieces now? The other one is, and this is an interesting one because I look at the Western Conference standings, and I think part of the reason the Raptors have kind of maintained this, hey, maybe we don't have to make a move, we won't be pressured stance, is that the West is really, really, really tight. And I say that in terms of standings 4 through 13, but also in terms of, hey, the Nuggets are 3 games up on the Grizzlies, who are 2.5 games up on the Kings, who are 2 games up on the Clippers. I don't think that either of those three teams think that they are the best team in the Western Conference, or maybe even the third best team in the Western Conference. I do wonder if, as things play out, Memphis or Denver become interesting spots, where Memphis also has some extra picks. They have a 2024 first from Golden State that's only top four protected. If you wanted to fade kind of the post Bob Myers era potentially with Memphis, they also have, you know, Memphis is the depth team in the NBA. So if you were looking to get two, maybe even three plug and play pieces for the bench group, I'm not saying that would be the sexiest of deals, but they've got a lot of guys. And then Denver becomes interesting. It's maybe trading one question mark for another, but this chatter that Bones Highland would like a bigger role and you know, would be open to a different landing spot, some sort of, hey, guy wants a larger role on this team for guy wants a larger role on that team. It's kind of a grass isn't greener for the players, but it's interesting from the team side because, first of all, Bones Highland rules. He's a little younger, a little cheaper, and then once you add in the pieces to make the trade math work, the hard part there is that Denver doesn't own a lot of picks. So you have to be really high on, say, a Bones Highland and or Zeke Nagy and or Christian Braun or whoever it is. That gets a little tougher. But I do think you can get those three teams and maybe more in the Western Conference into a little bit of a pressure point come Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week. Eric, you were on the road with the team. Quickly before I let you go, you and I have been on the road with this team
for trade deadlines in the past. I don't know that I remember, you know, the whole front office being there for almost every game on a trip heading into the trade deadline. Now they're around, but a lot of times it's, hey, let's have the war room back in Toronto and be in and out on trips. Did you get anything from being on the first four games of that trip, or five games of that trip? You must be exhausted. Did you get much from being on the first five games of that trip in terms of, you know, where the energy is, where the tension points are around this team right now?
Yeah, first of all, Masai, for some reason, skipped Sacramento. I can't imagine why. I joined them in San Francisco and I believe was there only through the Phoenix game. So he was there for three games. Bobby Webster was there, has been there the whole time. And I saw Teresa Rush was also there. This team knew the importance of this trip, and this team, for better or worse, I think it's a good quality, has a lot of self-belief. And I think there's just a disappointment, a profound disappointment with everybody involved, because they thought it would be different. And even through the first four games, they were only 2-2, but there was a different energy level in all of those games, I would say. Even when the defense struggled against Golden State, it's not like they weren't trying. They were perhaps trying too hard and pressuring too much and getting exposed behind. I think the Utah game, and maybe that's just because it's the most recent game and it's recency bias, it might have upset is too strong, but to have a defensive performance like that, when the vibes were we can do this, we're better than this, we need to show it now. At a few other points this season, it has to be disappointing. And Fred VanVleet was asked about it. He said, are you guys frustrated in the room? He said, no, that was all he said. I can't imagine how they're not, to a certain extent. I spoke with Pascal Siakam. He just seems, disappointed as well. With how things are going and very anxious to get the win. So I think, everybody will be a bit relieved when the trade deadline passes, whatever happens. I don't think there's huge interpersonal dynamics that are really worrying, at least with the roster, certainly. But this is a group that's pretty disappointed with how things have turned out. And I think, honestly, you saw it play out with Nick Nurse's complaining about the officiating, which he does now and then against the Jazz. And it's just a group that expected more from itself. And they know they've essentially run out of time. And that's a tough place to be, right?
It is a tough place to be. And they're not alone in having expected more and being a little disappointed in how this has played out. Not disappointed me in how this segment has played out. Eric Kareen, my old pal of Raptors Reasonablest of The Athletic, thanks so much for taking the time out, man. Get some rest after that five-game road trip.
I appreciate it, Blake. Let's go, Sammy. The build to Elimination Chamber starts now.
It sure does, and I'll be there. So, the nuclear pop or nuclear heat when Roman puts him in his place for stepping out on the bloodline. We'll see. Eric, thanks so much, man.
See ya.
That was Eric Kareen of The Athletic. Make sure you're following all his stuff ahead of the NBA trade deadline for the Raptors' perspective there. We, of course, also have Michael Grange on the road with the Raptors right now, William Liu and Alex Wong with an extended Raptors show next week on deadline day, and then myself and Ben Ennis with an extended fan drive time on deadline day as well. It's now time for Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. Quite the night in the NBA. If you are looking for non-Raptors action, the Lakers, of course, in action as LeBron James looks to get a little closer to that all-time scoring record. They're -2.5 favorites at Indiana. Big Eastern Conference implications with Memphis visiting Cleveland. Caris LeVert, we just found out, will not be in the lineup for that one as he deals with hamstring soreness and some trade rumors of their own. The Cavs are 6-point favorites in that one, but I'd expect that one to tick a little closer with the LeVert news coming down. And then the Heat, slight favorites, -2 at the New York Knicks. The Knicks and Heat jockeying for that sixth seed in the Eastern Conference, which of course is the spot at which you avoid the play-in
altogether. With how close all these teams are, you probably want to avoid the play-in if you can, even though you get that little extra revenue there. The bottom part of the East play-in is going to be interesting to see play out, because Washington has sold a little bit already. Indiana could make the case to sell. And as we heard from Howard Beck earlier, the Bulls should probably blow it up. Below all of them, the Toronto Raptors. They're back in action tomorrow. So are we. Blake Murphy, Ben Annis, Fan Drive Time, coming back at you tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Thanks for listening. Sports at 590, The Fan.